Hi there, this is Jason Murchie, the host of Values and Ethics from Living Room to Boardroom, broadcast to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on World Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We have a short commercial break coming up here, but after that, we're going to discuss wisdom. I've got two guests who, between them, have well over 100 years of thinking and experiencing and writing. One of them is a bona fide expert on wisdom, and, well, so is the other one. You might not think about experts in wisdom, but there are folks who spend a lot of time studying the concept of wisdom, and I'm going to bring you two of the most remarkable ones today. So please stay tuned. When I return, we will discuss the revolution in wisdom that is sorely needed in this day and age.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be on the air, behind the mic?
Are you an expert in your field or just passionate about a particular topic?
Then World Talk Radio has a place for you. You could host your own professional show and share your message with the world.
World Talk Radio is producing a new fall lineup and is interested in hearing your show ideas. Let us help you start your own radio show today from anywhere in the world.
Call right now to find out how you can become a host. It's easier than you think. Call 858-836-0164 or email us at newshows@worldtalkradio.com.
How do you like your coffee? Not all coffee is the same. Kona coffee beans from Hawaii are some of the best anywhere. But not all Kona coffee is the same. Aloha Island Coffee, handcrafted like fine wine, is a family-owned private Kona plantation. They've created the finest boutique coffee you'll ever drink. Aloha Island Coffee, rare, very special, naturally low in acid and pesticide-free. Click on the banner on the Chef Larry Show page, AlohaIslandCoffee.com.
Listen, the world is talking. World Talk Radio.
To speak with our show hosts or guests during the live show, call us toll-free in North America, 888-514-2100. Everywhere else, call 001-858-268-3068.
Hi there, welcome back. That bagpipe is being played by Cawthorn McDonald, my first guest. I'm just kidding. That is Afro-Celt Sound System, as I mentioned last week. But today's show is about wisdom, and you know, I've become acquainted with both Cawthorn McDonald and Nicholas Maxwell. Somehow you kind of find folks out there who have similar interests and wishes and will and things like this, and so I came across Cawthorn McDonald, I think, by searching on the word wisdom on Google, and I'm honored to say that he's become kind of an internet buddy of mine, and we started putting together the idea of doing a show about wisdom and how that relates to knowledge and science and progress, and I think it's important because scientific knowledge and technology have led to much that is good, but also to much that is harmful. Progress disassociated from a more basic concern for wisdom has left us all in a big quandary. Nicholas Maxwell says, quote, "All of our modern global crises are the outcome of science without wisdom." He goes on to say, if we are to avoid in this century the horrors of the last one, wars, death camps, dictatorships, poverty, environmental damage, we urgently need to learn how to acquire more wisdom, which in turn means that our institutions of learning must be devoted to that end. So there's a couple of premises here that I'd like to just be explicit about and then spend the show slowly digesting, and that is that progress disassociated from a more basic concern for wisdom has left us in a big quandary. And secondly, that one of the best ways for us to remedy this situation is to change our educational system. So, without further ado, I'd like to bring on Cawthorne MacDonald. He's a writer, independent scholar, and former communication systems engineer. He's written extensively about the nature of reality, including consciousness and mind, the development of wisdom, the global problematique, and the challenge of creating a sustainable future. He has a number of books, one of which is just chock full of quotations on wisdom. That book is called Toward Wisdom. I also have on my bookshelf Matters of Consequence. I'd like to get to that one soon. As I said, he runs the Wisdom page, which I believe you can click on his name and picture to find, and also down at the bottom of this page I have a link to the Wisdom page. Hello, Cop.
Hi there, Jason. How
hey.
You doing?
Nice to talk with you.
Good to talk with you as always.
Yes. So you and Nicholas Maxwell and I were thinking that it would be a good idea to investigate what I guess turns out to be one of Nicholas's, you know, life's work type of ideas, and I assume that you have a lot of sympathy and belief in the same ideas, and that is that scientific knowledge and technology have led to much that is good, but also much that is harmful. You think that's true?
Exactly. I mean, we've got this amazing capability. You know, our knowledge has allowed us to do all kinds of things, but it hasn't always been guided by wisdom. And that's an understatement.
Right. Well, I believe that Nicholas is on the line, and I'm going to bring him on, too. You two are well acquainted, so I don't need to introduce you. Hello,
well,
Nicholas.
We've emailed each other, but we've never talked before.
Okay.
Hello, Cop. Hi there, Nicholas. Good to hear your voice.
I'm sure, Cop, you'll be impressed by the accent that Nicholas has. I spoke with him this morning right before the show, and he sounds like such a genteel fellow. I'm excited to be able to talk with him for 50 minutes. So did you hear what Cop and I were discussing about scientific knowledge? That's an idea that you have a lot of passion about, and you've spent a lot of your time researching and writing about. Can you tell us something about what's so interesting about this idea that knowledge separate from wisdom is not necessarily helpful to us?
Okay, well, you know, we have this long tradition of rational inquiry devoted to improving knowledge and technological know-how, going back to the scientific revolution in the 17th, 16th century. And, of course, the original idea was that this was going to help promote human welfare. That's really the basic idea. First of all, you acquire knowledge, and then you apply it to help solve social problems. And, well, I have two arguments, but I suppose the first one is that this is damagingly irrational. If our concern is really to help promote human welfare, to help us create a better world, then the problems, fundamentally the problems we need to solve, are problems of living. What in the end helps us achieve what is of value in life is what we do or what we refrain from doing. So that if we're going to tackle this rationally, what we ought to have is a kind of inquiry that gives absolute priority to articulating our problems of living and proposing and critically assessing possible solutions. That is, things that we might do, policies, political programs, philosophies of life.
I hear what you're saying, and I think that that's going to be one of the main thrusts of this program, but let's define a couple of things right up front, if we could. Can we define knowledge, and can we define wisdom? And why don't I give knowledge to you, Nicholas, and then let's toss it to Cop to shape that a bit and see how wisdom is similar and different from that.
Well, philosophers have been debating what is knowledge exactly for a long time, and I rather share Karl Popper's antipathy towards thinking that, you know, definitions are a big thing. But I suppose roughly what one means by knowledge is our best attempt at determining how things are, what the facts are. Of course, it also involves, you know, if we're talking about scientific knowledge, it also involves explanation, understanding why things happen as they do. And more than on top of explanation, understanding as well. These are all part of the scientific enterprise.
Okay, so...
And there's a sort of distinction, too, between knowing that, you know, that something is the case, and knowing how, which is knowing how to do something.
Okay, so suffice to say, building a nuclear bomb involves a lot of in-depth knowledge.
Yes.
Okay. Cop, can you say some things about how wisdom is similar to or different from knowledge?
Well, my perspective on it is that knowledge is sort of fact-oriented, and wisdom is sort of meaning-oriented. And so wisdom comes at a set of facts from various perspectives and from grounding in certain values, and comes up with a feeling about what this really means, and in some context or other, and there are many, many contexts involved. So it's, I see it as a kind of meta-knowledge. It's a meaning-centered way of looking at the facts.
Okay, so if it takes facts and knowledge to construct a nuclear bomb, how would wisdom be different than, you know, the method of producing a nuclear bomb?
Well, it's like we can take a context like the well-being of humanity, and wisdom would look at the construction of a nuclear bomb from that perspective and would ask many different questions about this to try to get a sense of what the meaning of this would be for humanity.
Like when to use it and when not to use it, whether one should use it.
Or should you know, it be done at all.
No. Mm. Okay, questions like that.
So, can I add something
yes.
to wisdom?
Go for it, Nicholas.
The way I think of it is it's not incompatible with what Kopp said, but it develops in a certain direction. The way I see wisdom is that it is, and this is the, you know, this emerged out of my thinking about the academic enterprise and science, it's the capacity and perhaps also the active desire to realize what is the value in life for oneself and others. Realize meaning both make real or create what is a value, but also apprehend or experience what is a value. So it takes into account both the active part of research and also inquiry and also the more, you know, what is usually thought of as contemplative. And it includes knowledge and technological know-how, at least those parts of knowledge and technological know-how that are of benefit to people.
Okay, so has it always been like this, do you think, Nicholas? Or when humans started to discover new ideas and new tools and new ways of relating to each other, that it was more benign, like, let's say, inventing the wheel? Was there something about inventing the wheel that left us in a big quandary, or that was leading to horrors? Or is that more of... science and technology has kind of reached a fever pitch as of late?
I think there's always been this ambivalent aspect to the whole thing. I mean, you know, the ancient Greeks, by philosophy, which was really, you know, what we would now call inquiry, means the love of wisdom. So that was, that was sort of fairly basic. But on the other hand, someone like Archimedes, who helped to develop weapons of defense, I think I'm right in saying, in Syracuse. And more recently, Galileo was eager to have the telescope used for military purposes, and Leonardo, as we know, built fortresses and was concerned with weapons. So there's always been this Science needs funding. It needs patronage, and the people who tend to have money are powerful, and they want weapons.
So I'm afraid so.
Science has tended to have this double aspect of being of benefit, but also producing weapons and horrible things. Going right back.
Well, let me read a quotation to you, and then I'll briefly get your opinions on it, and then we're going to go to commercial. And please help me with the pronunciation if you know. It's by Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Yes.
Okay, Bonhoeffer, Bonhoeffer. He wrote, "To understand reality is not the same as to know about outward events. It is to perceive the essential nature of things. The best informed man is not necessarily the wisest. Indeed, there is a danger that precisely in the multiplicity of his knowledge, he will lose sight of what is essential. But on the other hand, knowledge of an apparently trivial detail quite often makes it possible to see into the depths of things. And so the wise man will seek to acquire the best possible knowledge about events, but always without becoming dependent upon this knowledge. To recognize the significant in the factual is wisdom." Copthorne, what do you think about that?
Well, and this ties in with what Nicholas was saying about knowledge being a part of wisdom, and it certainly is, and it also ties into what Abraham Maslow found with his self-actualizing people, that if you understand the problem very, very deeply, the chances are you will know what the solution is. In other words, in the depth of understanding the problem is very often the answer to this. So I would agree with his statement.
And Nicholas, did you catch that? It was pretty dense.
Yes, it's always struck me as, I think improving one's understanding of the problem and reformulating the problem is absolutely essential to the rational tackling, going about tackling a problem in the best possible way, in the way which is most likely to lead to its solution. And, it's one of the things that education tends not to emphasize, because in an exam, for example, you can't say, given a question, this is the wrong question, it should be formulated like this, and then solve that problem. You won't get very good marks if you do that. There's a tendency, not to underemphasize that crucial aspect of just simply turning a sense of frustration or anguish of trouble into an articulated problem. That in itself is essential and often very difficult to do, and something we mostly don't discover how to do. It's not a part of education to discover how to do that.
Yes, let's take a short break, and then we're going to hit that idea head on, because I know that's one of the things that you can really bring to the show today is, what's our education system like, and
okay.
Cognizant of wisdom is it, and if not, what can we do about that? So let me go into the commercial with a quotation by Abraham Maslow, whom Copthorne MacDonald just mentioned. He said, "And to others of goodwill who want to help make a better world, I recommend strongly that they consider science, humanistic science, as a way of doing this, a very good and necessary way, perhaps even the best way of all." Hi there, this is the second segment of the show, Wisdom, We Need a Revolution. I'm speaking with Copthorne MacDonald and Nicholas Maxwell. two men who have spent time and energy studying the idea of wisdom and how it can be helpful to us. I intend to spend the second segment talking about the educational system and how that's related to knowledge and wisdom and to social problems and planetary problems. And then in the third segment, I'm going to get a little further into how each of us can take this information, this knowledge, and turn it into wisdom after the show is over. But I'd like to leave you with a Dennis Miller quote before we go to commercial. Perhaps he's not often thought of by folks as being about knowledge and wisdom, but I think if you listen to any of his stand-up comedy or his show, he's really very erudite, and he's a very careful thinker and probably brilliant, actually, although I differ from his politics a bit. He says, "We live in an era and time when calling someone an Einstein is considered to be somewhat of an insult. Morons are out there in force, making left-hand turns from right-hand lanes, trying to pay for drive-through tacos with a frickin' check, calling 411 to get the number for information. What happened? First and foremost, as a matter of fact, numbers 1, 2, and what comes after 2? We didn't pay enough attention to our educational system."
Are you living your dash? It's that little line between your date of birth and date of death that represents your life. Are you living your life by design or by default? Are you as effective as you'd like to be? Dash coaches uncover what you don't see so you can achieve that effectiveness. They empower people and organizations to optimize their dash. Get your free dash coaching session today. Call 516-677-9111 or visit dashlive.com.
Guys, confused in the area of dating and relationships? Please allow Doc Love to coach you. He's been featured in major media such as Time and Fox News for his ability to coach you with the fairer sex. Don't miss the Doc Love Show, Understanding Women for Men Only, each Sunday morning on World Talk Radio.
Listen, the world is talking. World Talk Radio.
Interested in advertising on any of our shows? Please click the advertise link on the homepage or send an email to ads@worldtalkradio.com. Or you can click on the sponsor this show link on any of the show pages.
Welcome back. Well, I'm here with Cop MacDonald and Nick Maxwell. You can read about them on the show page that you're currently using to listen to this show. There's a lot about Nicholas Maxwell that I didn't get into right up front, but he's published 5 books on the theme of arguing that we need to bring about a revolution in academia so that it seeks to promote wisdom and does not just acquire knowledge. For example, the book What's Wrong with Science, From Knowledge to Wisdom, and also The Comprehensibility of the Universe. You can also click on their pictures to be routed to their respective web pages. And I've also mentioned the Wisdom page, which I think is definitely worth going to. And it's kind of a complicated address, so I suggest you just use the link there at the bottom of the page. So let me start you gentlemen out with a quotation, and then let's talk about the educational system and what is currently going on with that, what's currently going on with our communities, our planet, and think about what it is that you're proposing, Nicholas, and I'll ask Copthorne MacDonald how well he agrees with that. Anyway, here's the quotation by Doc Childre and Deborah Rosman. "It is no longer enough to be smart. All the technological tools in the world add meaning and value only if they enhance our core values, the deepest part of our heart. Acquiring knowledge is no guarantee of practical, useful application. Wisdom implies a mature integration of appropriate technology, a seasoned ability to filter the inessential from the essential. Nicholas, please tell us about what our educational system, at least in the United States and in Great Britain, are about, and why that's right or wrong.
Well, I've just published an article called Philosophy Seminars for Five-Year-Olds. I sort of, after 30 years of trying to persuade my colleagues and professors, you know, I thought maybe you need to start with the five-year-olds. And the idea is that education ought to have a kind of central part of it, should be a sort of discussion seminar where kids are given an opportunity to talk about problems and issues and concerns, things that interest them. And the role of the teacher is to ensure that not everyone talks at once, that one person talks at a time, and that the others listen, and that, that something like cooperative rationality of exploration of problems and ideas gets going. And that this would be central to the curriculum. And out of this would emerge, on the one hand, things like science, and on the other hand, storytelling could emerge into literature and drama and history. And every year, it would mean that as the five-year-olds become six-year-olds and seven-year-olds, depending on what their interests are and what they've been exploring and discussing, it would influence what they learnt in other areas. I mean, the influence would go in both directions. So there'd be a sort of input from the kids. Now, I don't know whether anything quite like this goes on anywhere. I talked to my local primary school, and the head teacher said, "Oh yes, we do all that already." But I wasn't absolutely certain.
I'm not certain either.
It does go on.
Well, let me ask
and
you this:
ought to go on, all the way to universities.
Right. Cobb McDonald, let me ask you, can you start where Nicholas started from, but actually go back a little further and say something about some of the problems that we're facing as societies, let's say first world societies, if you will, and also as a planet in general. What's going on, and what, how is that relevant to our educational system?
Well, the list is certainly a long one. I mean, what's been in the headlines recently is the oil problem. We're reaching what they call peak oil, which is means we're not apt to get more barrels out of the ground in the future than we are at the moment, and yet we've got a great increase in demand coming from the developing countries like China and India. So no mystery that prices are going up, and they're going to go up a lot more. And just taking that one example, Sweden has decided they are going to get completely off fossil fuels in 15 years. I mean, this is a national program. And I would say this is definitely some wise people making some wise decisions. And unfortunately, in North America here, and both Canada and the U.S., we've been lagging behind, just as several people have put it, trying to keep the party going. Mm. And of course, there's the all sorts of environmental problems with species being destroyed right and left, and pollution, which is just widespread, and there are many others. But
violence and poverty and things like this are probably also related in some way to how we as societies value education and wisdom. And I'm recalling that the Latin word from which education is derived means to draw out, and so I think that education at its highest is to do what Nicholas was suggesting, which, although it sounds absurd when you first look at it, it seems to make good sense in a really deep way, that if we begin to draw out of children and adolescents and adults you know, this wisdom that probably lies within them, or at least has the potential to lie within them, that we're going to be doing better for our society than just teaching them how to memorize the, you know, the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. It seems as though to do the three R's really just keeps us moving in the same exact direction, and that's the direction of knowledge, but knowledge separate from any type of ethical or values-based understanding. And so it seems that, you know, to go deeper than knowledge, but to look at wisdom, to be able to teach wisdom from a very early age, might be one of our best methods of surviving and thriving here in this century. Is that one of your theses, Nicholas?
Well, yes, certainly. And I was just wanted to add to what Cop was talking about, because I think one of the really serious problems that we face, which people are talking about now, is global warming. I mean, you know, there are these scenarios that it may lead to a sort of runaway effect, and the temperature might rise not just to 2 degrees, but 5, or some people even suggest 10 degrees, which would be devastating. And devastating, of course, you know, often for the poorest people in the world. And, you know, if all the ice melts on Greenland and Antarctica, which may won't happen overnight, but might happen in the next century or two, the level of the oceans rises by somewhere between 50 meters and 80 meters.
Wow.
And you know, that would absolutely devastate. I mean, it's almost inconceivable what may be happening. And this is already underway, and we're not really addressing this problem. And it's just absolutely what we're talking about. How has this come about? Well, it's come about. It's been made possible by science and technology, which made possible industrialization and made possible massive population growth. And the two things together have producing global warming. And this is a problem. Of course, it needs knowledge and it needs new technology, but it needs, you know, that we need to live in new ways.
Cop, do you think it's possible to create some sort of a Manhattan Project for some of the world's most pressing problems? Or do you think, on the contrary, that with conservative men like Tony Blair and George Bush, and I think I also read that Canada now has a more conservative prime minister, that we're just not going to have a awakening that we need to approach some of our problems? Even if George Bush does say in the State of the Union address that we're addicted to oil, it's not really truly thought of as a crisis, and he's not going to make any real mid-course corrections.
You're interested in values, Nick's interested in values, I'm interested in values, and one of the problems here is that so many institutions are organized around sets of values that are not benefiting the great mass of human beings, and certainly are not going to be benefiting my grandchildren and generations after that, if there are any. And the education comes in here. You were talking about the three R's and so forth, and so much of present education, especially, I think all through the whole spectrum, from kindergarten up through university, is in the service of a set of values which are not, you would not call the values of the wise. They're in the service of maintaining systems which are basically destructive, and to, you know, the long-term well-being of humankind. And one of the symptoms of that is what Nick's talking about, global warming, that this is a side effect of, you know, keeping the party going for certain people who have the power to keep the party going.
Yeah, maybe the 1 or 2% of people who make the big decisions and whose life is really kind of like a party, it's probably not a surprise, or let's say You know, it is ironic that Bush spends so much time clearing brush from his home and bicycling and chatting with folks. And, you know, Dick Cheney spends a lot of time hunting. And you know, it just seems as though the folks who make the big decisions are they think of themselves as less likely to be drastically affected by things like poverty, violence, global warming. It's as though they have not only a different set of values, but a different set of, let's say, a different level of wisdom. They're thinking fundamentally differently than some other folks. Does that seem right to you, Nicholas?
Well, I think something like global warming is something that affects us all. I mean, we all contribute to, you know, something like, in this country, the UK, 11% of global warming gases are produced by aeroplanes. And, you know, people want to fly around and visit places, and we all do it. We're all involved. We're all implicated. There is, I think Kopp is right, that there is this sort of, alliance, in a way, between the political system and the commercial, industrial, the wealth. And it's actually extremely short-sighted. And politics is notorious for not being able to look at how things will be in 20 years' time. Mostly, I mean, with a few exceptions, like Sweden, where they have always been more enlightened than the rest of us.
That's a good word to describe it, enlightenment. Some people, they have a hard time understanding what enlightenment means, and maybe it does have a more esoteric meaning in a way, but in the simplest way, enlightenment, it's kind of like wisdom, isn't it, Kopp? It's kind of like a deep understanding of what is what.
I would say exactly, yep. I mean, there is the spiritual enlightenment, which, as you say, may be a little bit something else, but it's illuminating, I would say, with meaning from, you know, this meta world that looks down in the facts and tries to make more sense of them. That's enlightening, illuminating for sure.
Well, gentlemen, I have to take a short commercial break, but when we get back, we'll still have another 15 minutes to continue to discuss some of the particulars of this educational revolution, and also what folks can do in their everyday lives. I was going to become a pilot. I'm training myself now, but after what Nicholas said, I feel guilty doing that. So maybe I'll switch it up to something less harmful to the environment. Either that, or I'll have a lot of, freeze-dried meals that I can drop from the plane as I pass over poor areas. That way I can feel better about what I'm doing. Let me go to a commercial here with a quotation from Emma Goldman, who, of course, was no establishment thinker and didn't seem to be very corruptible. She said, "No one has yet fully realized the wealth of sympathy, kindness, and generosity hidden in the soul of a child. The effort of every true education should be to unlock that treasure." Enrico Fermi said, "It is no good to try to stop knowledge from going forward. Ignorance is never better than knowledge." And the English have a saying that goes, "Ignorance is a voluntary misfortune." Just two things to think about in regard to this idea of knowledge versus ignorance, and how wisdom relates to both of those. And also then, once you have an understanding of wisdom, once you have a kind of a wisdom nugget, if you will, about a certain phenomenon, let's say global warming, then what values are required to act upon it? For there's a difference between knowing that we are destroying the world and stopping destroying the world. Well, chew on that for a while. Go get something to drink or use the restroom and come right back. And we'll still have 15 minutes of discussion with these very interesting and erudite gentlemen.
Do you dream of owning your own business? Franchising may hold the key. Invest in a proven business with proven results. Not sure where to start? Franchise Solutions can help. Franchise Solutions has helped thousands of entrepreneurs find a business to fit their goals and dreams. Find information on hundreds of franchise and business opportunities, as well as tips, advice, and tons of franchise-related resources. Franchise Solutions. Find the business that's right for you. Visit us online today at www.franchisesolutions.com.
Come on, dear, it's time to go.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning.
I know, isn't it great? The early bird gets the worm. I don't want to be late. I hear the fish are really biting. I've got the Jeep all packed.
This man suffers from extreme excitement because he just bought a new Jeep from Carl Berger's Jeep World in La Mesa.
I can smell it already.
Smell? Nobody smells at 4 a.m.
This man does, because he can't wait to ride in his new Jeep from Carl Berger's Jeep World. Jeep versatility all wrapped up in leather.
Come on, dear, up and at 'em.
Give it a rest, dear. We're only going antique shopping. The store's not even open.
You, too, could suffer extreme excitability. See the world of difference at Carl Berger's Jeep World. Low prices, great selection, and 5-star customer service. Save time by shopping online at carlberger.com.
Let's go! Let's go!
It's a world of difference. Carl Berger.
Carl Berger's Jeep World. Get excited today. Carl Berger's Jeep World. I-8 at Jackson Drive, La Mesa.
Listen. The world is talking. World Talk Radio.
To speak with our show hosts or guests during the live show, call us toll-free in North America, 888-514-2100. Everywhere else, call 001-858-268-3068.
Hi, welcome back. Let me say a couple things about both of my guests here. If you were to pack yourself a week worth of food and close yourself off in the room that has your computer, you can spend that much time looking through their websites. You don't even want to think about buying their books if you are short of time. It would probably take a year to digest what these two men have thought about and what they're trying to communicate, but you got to take your hat off, I think, to the fact that they are studying something that is so elusive and yet so simple as wisdom. And I know they find it fascinating, as do I. And to you, I would say I appreciate where you two have tread, because I feel like in a way it's easier for me to do so, to follow in your footsteps, to see what you've already done, you know, to read your books and to look through your website. It's very helpful to me, and I think to anybody else out there who has an interest in wisdom. So thank you two for what you're doing. It's much more helpful to the world than if you two just worked for such and such corporation for your 30 years and then took your retirement and we never heard from you again. Euripides said wisdom is respect for what is right. So that's an interesting idea about, is it wise to pollute the planet as we are? Is it wise to lose as many species every day as we do? Is it wise to have this many guns on the streets? Is it wise to let this many people go without the health care that we obviously have the capacity to provide? Things like this. I'm just curious, now that I have you on the phone here, do you have an understanding, either of you, about what this disconnect is between the wisdom that the three of us and many, many others who came before us and many who are out there seem to understand versus the way that humanity has been traveling ever since the beginning, with, you know, an eye for an eye, all the way up to the death penalty today, and late third trimester abortions, and all of the plastic surgery that we do to make ourselves look a little prettier, and it just seems like the world's almost crazy, and yet there is this thing called wisdom. How do you explain that?
Nick, you wanna?
Well, this is my view that we have to learn how to live in this complicated and interconnected and rapidly changing world that we've created or we've find ourselves in. And at schools, at universities, the central task should be to help us to learn how to live, how to achieve what is of value in life, how to see the interconnections between our own personal life and what we want out of life, or what we may hope to achieve in life, and millions of others, most of whom, are complete strangers, but nevertheless, what we do has an impact. And this is not obvious. We need to learn how to do it. We need to learn, what to do in response as individuals. And this is an individual matter, but it's also a public matter. And I think that our institutions of learning, our universities and our schools and our research institutions, have taken the wrong model of learning, if you like. It's the pursuit of knowledge and technological know-how, which, as we've already been arguing, is despite much that is of value that has emerged out of this, is also the underlying cause of the problem. And we need a revolution in our universities and in our schools. So part of the problem is that academic is almost a word for irrelevant, isn't it? That's academic. And I think non-academics see academia, universities as sort of not really relevant to what's going on in the world. But actually, in the long term, it's absolutely of fundamental relevance.
Yeah, it is interesting the way that the ancient Greeks and the Chinese and the Egyptians and the Mayans, and you can see in many cultures their attempt to make wisdom something that guided them, but they also seem to have declined in certain ways, and I think with America, the latest empire, you see the same thing. You see that we have some of us who are interested in the greater good and a life of value and wisdom, things like this, but they're not the folks who are making big decisions. And if history repeats itself, America is not going to live up to the high aspirations that a lot of us have for it, and if America tanks, who knows what's going to happen to Canada, Sweden, and England, and some of the other first world countries that are perhaps more progressive than we are. Cop, let me ask you, why is it the same question that I asked Nick? Why is it that we have this thing called wisdom, and we've been, how long has it been since Socrates and people like that have spoken, remarkably about wisdom and values and philosophy, and yet we still don't seem to have the type of system that elevates those folks who care most about that to the positions of power, and those who are in power don't seem to care much about wisdom?
Well, I guess my simple answer is that everybody starts from zero when they're born, and we've really got two different kinds of wisdom that we're talking about here. We've been talking mostly about sociocultural wisdom, but in other words, the wisdom or lack of it that's embodied in societal institutions and our culture. And then there's this thing of personal wisdom, which has an awful lot to do with psychological growth. And some of the things that you had mentioned, you know, in your lead up to this, are personal characteristics of, you know, that we find in young children. And there are many, many adults that haven't found their way out of that. I mean, there's greed, there's reactivity, anger and hatred and jealousy and fear and all these kinds of things that people have not managed to deal with very effectively. And so each person sort of starts from, you know, the 2-year-old behavior, and which is really not very nice stuff. And they're either in an environment that helps them get over that and grow and grow and grow, or they're not. Maslow sort of, you know, showed the movement from, you know, our concern about just basic physiological needs up through a bunch of stages up to what he called, you know, the self-actualization needs, which by the time you get there, you've taken care of a whole bunch of business psychologically. And so part of this personal wisdom of becoming a wise individual is psychological growth, or, you know, many people would say that psychological and spiritual are tied together. So, you know, the early stages we're dealing with psychology, and then the later stages of development, it's perhaps more spiritual. But it's that trend line that many people are not walking along. So what I'm saying is we've got two, particularly in the field of education, we have two things. Nick is talking about, you know, academic scholarship and where that focus should be. It's been on knowledge acquisition. It really should be on the human situation, and knowledge acquisition should be in the service of that. And then our institutions of higher learning are also educational. They also educate young people to, you know, go out in the world. And I think much could be done within those institutions to help college students develop further in this area of personal wisdom. So,
when you talk about Maslow, I'd just like to note that there's a website called maslow.org, M-A-S-L-O-W, and at the bottom of the page that the listener is currently looking at, there's a link to his B values, which I believe means being values, and many of them are very reminiscent of what I would call values of the wise. And of course, I didn't invent anything new there. I was taking a cue from people like Maslow, and so that's a really interesting website to check out as well. In the last 2 minutes, let me give each of you a minute each to share something practical to get out in front of society, if you will, and say a little something about what you'd like to see change in the educational system that is very practical rather than aspirational or idealistic, and then something that a person can do, you know, today as soon as they turn off the computer that is in the service of wisdom and growth and will be helpful to themselves and also to the planet. Nicholas?
Well, it depends on who you are, whether you're a student or a member of staff, a teacher, because your capacities and your powers are very different.
I acknowledge that. You're right. You're very right about that.
I think, you know, if you're a student, I used to tell my students that you should treat your lecturers gently because they're will be nervous and defensive, but you should always ask questions like, why are we studying what we're doing, what we're studying? You know, why are we learning this? What is the problem that led to this knowledge that we're learning? Why is this of interest? What about other things that we might be learning?
And you should do this not in a threatening way, but because you're genuinely interested. And you all learning should be participatory in both directions, not just sort of, you know, the student, the pupil absorbing, which is a disaster.
Well, those are words of wisdom from Nicholas Maxwell, and let's finish up with something that Kopp has to say. What would you think is a good practical step if you could just, you know, wave a magic wand and make it so? And then also, what would you suggest somebody do later on this afternoon or tomorrow morning that can be helpful to themselves or the world?
Okay, a couple of things. What set me off on this path was Maslow's work and this idea of self-actualization, which somebody at this first seminar I went to, this guy got this faraway look in his eyes and said, yes, becoming all you're capable of becoming. You know, that was a great motivation to me, and I think, you know, reading Maslow and reading about Maslow would be helpful. The other thing is, a clearer understanding of what wisdom is, I think, is also helpful. That, you know, if we can get rid of the amorphousness and the fuzziness of this whole idea of wisdom and what that is, that in itself can be very helpful. There was in Burkina Faso, there was a group of wise people who were trying to get more wisdom into African society, and they came up with four stages of wisdom, and one was wisdom in potential, which is all of us, and then wisdom in intention, which would involve understanding a bit about it, and then deciding, yeah, I want to go down that path. And then there were, the next stage was people who were actually involved, and finally there were people who other people felt were wise. So those four stages, I think, is a little bit helpful.
And I thank you, Nicholas Maxwell and Cawthorn McDonald, for your time. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully it will have some positive impact on a listener somewhere, sometime, hopefully soon.
I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, and it's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Cop.
Thank you.
All righty. And to the listener, I say thank you for your time, and stay tuned next week. We're going to talk about the values divide in America.
World Talk Radio, the number one source for informative talk on the World Wide Web. World.